Moncrief on News Talk.
Lucy Blank had moved to New York to take up her dream job, but thanks to a cruel and bullying boss, that turned nightmarish. Lucy was forced to return to the UK, broke and adrift, and ended up on OnlyFans to try and pay off her debts. Yet, curiously, she doesn't view this necessarily as a sign of falling. Rather, it helped save her life. Good afternoon, Lucy.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
So let's go back to kind of getting this job in New York. You'd been doing very well on with having TikTok accounts and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I started on TikTok as an influencer, they're now known as, creating content, and was picked up for a newspaper, unnamed newspaper, and kind of helped them internally, and it was fantastic. And I was moved out to America to run the socials out there. It was an incredible opportunity. I was 22 at the time, so really, really ahead of my age group. It was two of the best years of my life at that point.
Yeah, right. So, and for those first 2 years of living in New York, it's all going fantastically well, and then you get a new manager.
Yeah, so essentially what happened is I actually had this manager in the UK and quit that job, but they liked me so much, they moved me to New York. But unfortunately, you know, the internet these days, teams, how they're run, I was still managed remotely and it became completely untenable. I think if anyone has experienced, you know, true workplace bullying, and I don't mean the odd misogynistic comment, I mean really degrading workplace bullying, it takes its toll in a way that I've never experienced and isn't spoken about enough. And it was just unbearable.
Yeah. Could you give us some idea of what it was this chap was doing to you?
I mean, I'm going to be super careful with my words, obviously, for libel. But how do I put this? It was very, very clear that anything this individual, he or she, could do to get me to quit on my own terms, they were doing, taking away opportunities for me, talking down to me, excluding me, you know, kind of everything you would, you know, you read about and you expect someone to do. And including, again, like this is all alleged just for legal reasons. But, you know, physically cornering me and paying me less than people I hired. It was a very challenging situation. And at 22, I wasn't equipped with the language nor the experience to deal with that in a way that potentially I would now, or, you know, someone like my mother or my father would deal with. I felt very out of my depth against someone like that.
Yeah. Do you have any idea why? Did they seem to have a personal animus towards you for some reason?
Again, I hate to speculate and I try not to think.
But they never said like.
No, never said like. And, you know, again, being super general, I think within media and publishing, there are still some very set gender roles. And, you know, I could speculate all day why this individual did or did not like me, or their intentions may or may not have been. But ultimately, it was more the impact that it had on me. But no, I don't.
Yeah,
I don't know why that was.
Yeah.
And I don't want to speculate either.
Yeah, and in the end, you did quit the job or were you somehow forced out?
It's an interesting one because obviously on paper, I quit that job. And it's important to note, you know, no one signed my resignation for me. I did. But it was under the most immense pressure. I loved that job. It was where I found my purpose. And it was more than a job to me. It was my life. When you're out in a foreign country, if anyone listening has worked in a different country, that's all you have when you first move there. You don't have friends, you're away from your family. It's that. And then you kind of go to bed. And I started coming in late. I started not caring. And when you're being, you know, I use this word lightly, but abused in any kind of way, you don't necessarily notice where it's coming from. You just start hating your life. And I struggled to realize what was going on. I was just so unhappy and I became depressed. And it got to a point I was like, I'm going to get to a really dark place if I don't leave where I am. So for my genuine health, unfortunately, I had to leave because I wasn't winning.
And leaving and moving back to the UK, that's not a cheap proposition.
No. It's really not. And again, for everyone listening, you build a life out there. You have, you know, sometimes you've your furniture, you have all your belongings. Even if you manage to sell some of that, most of that you don't, you leave behind. So you're out of pocket of it because you've got in the US 2 weeks notice. And then the government want you out as quick as possible. So I'm moving all my stuff back. I'm trying to find a lease. It's a huge undertaking. Flights and then flying all your stuff back cost a fortune. It caught me off guard how expensive it was, not to mention being taxed at that point in two countries, because I'd just finished my tax return in the UK and then was being taxed in the US over the same year. So it was very difficult financially indeed.
Yeah. And when you went home, as I understand it, your parents had gone through a divorce. Divorces are always expensive. So there was nowhere to go for help when you arrived back in England.
Yeah, for private family reasons, it wasn't appropriate for me to live with my parents. I'm very fortunate they were still alive, but unfortunately, they couldn't give me housing or support during that period. Which, you know, again, it's a massive privilege to live with your parents, and unfortunately, I didn't have that privilege, so I had to find somewhere to live quite quickly.
So, and I assume it wasn't anywhere very particularly ritzy that you found to live.
No, I lived in a flat share in, you know, Back Road in Battersea. I used to live there, and I, you know, lots of the pubs I used to drink at. So I kind of went knocking door to door and was like, can I just do some pub work? Can I just get a shift here and there? And ended up working at a pub down the road from me just for some cash to pay the rent and pay off some of my debt, basically.
Yeah. But you were also doing a journalism course at the same time.
Yeah. So to explain to everyone listening again, it's so complicated and a bit of a nightmare. So in the UK, you need something called an NCTJ, which is essentially a qualification to work in a newsroom in the United Kingdom. And because I didn't start in the newsroom in the UK when I left, I didn't need it. But my experience level I came back with, I needed it. And I applied for jobs, I think, for 6 months. And every single job application came back with, you don't have an NCTJ. So it was... It's difficult explaining to people you're in such financial difficulty. Why on earth did you do this course? I literally couldn't get back into my career without this course. I'd kind of shot myself in the foot a little bit there. I didn't realize I would need it, because in the United States, you don't need it. So I had to do it, or I was going to stay working at the pub forever. There was no way back in without this, unfortunately. Yeah.
But you're working in a pub and doing this course at the same time. That's, I assume not making very much money. Rent in London, even if it's in a back street in Battersea, isn't going to be cheap. So were you struggling to survive financially?
Yeah, it was a disaster. I was also working another job. I was working a video editing job during my schooling hours. And then after kind of pretending to listen to lectures and work, I was then going to the pub job and working from 6 till 2 a.m., getting up at 8 a.m., going back to school. So there was no respite. It was a grit I've never experienced and have so much more appreciation for when you have to work to survive, and you will do it. It was hard.
Yeah. And you were drinking a bit?
Yeah. And again, I'm super open about this. I think when you... Financial stress is a stress. I mean, we obviously talk about, but the implications on your mental health are unlike anything I have ever experienced. It was so daunting thinking that the repossessor, you know, the tax man can be there kind of at any moment, because I was in massive debt, as I said, from that move home, and I wasn't keeping up properly with the rent payments. I was scraping by. I really struggled, and it was a bit easier to sometimes, you know, we're all human beings, have a few too many drinks to forget about the next day. It was a very, very difficult time. And at that time, again, I was only 23. Mm. It was very challenging.
Yeah. And when you decided then to open an OnlyFans account, you know, had you sat down and said, I really don't have any other options here?
It was a really tricky one, because I had dabbled in it a few years ago, but nothing explicit. So I was familiar with the platform, but I'd never done it, so to say, in the way that we recognize now with all these influencers who do it. Mm. And yeah, I would say it was like I had a red pill and a blue pill in my hand. It was the red pill of, you know, take this, you get yourself out of debt, you survive, you can pay your rent, but you will never work in news journalism ever again. Mm. Or you don't do it and you do get into debt, you do declare yourself bankrupt, and God knows what happens. And that, it's interesting how you renegotiate your morals when you're in crisis and you are really desperate. And it was very, very difficult. It was upsetting. I felt like news journalism was my life and it was my identity and my purpose, and knowing I was actively choosing to do something. And I take full responsibility. You know, I think a lot of people like you didn't have a choice. I did have a choice. I'm an adult. It was tough. It was a really, really tough conversation to have with myself. But I still felt in that moment, you know, when it comes to putting food on the table, you choose the food on the table over your reputation every time.
Yeah. And Lucy, going into it then, had you said to yourself, well, had you set red lines for yourself, if you like? Like, I'll do this kind of stuff, but I won't go that far.
Yes, I'd set a line, again, I'm aware we're on the radio, for taking all my kit off, yeah, if you like. I wasn't willing to do that at first. It was just kind of more what you'd see on the beach.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, that's where we started.
But the red line started kind of breaking down a bit for you.
The red line got erased. Yeah. Again, it's quite remarkable what you will do when you need to. And I don't regret that. It's an odd one because I've always been very prudent, if you like. I've not like taking my clothes off. I, you know, if you knew me in person, I don't even wear shorts. I'm a trouser person. Like I'm very modest. Mm. It was a really difficult decision. I couldn't understand. Hang on a minute. How am I like this in one way, but I'm willing to go this far? You know, kit off and more.
Yeah.
But when you kind of immerse yourself in that, and it becomes this act, it becomes work. I work hard. And I was like, actually, if I really put my foot on the gas here, yes, I'm out of survival mode. And yes, I've paid my rent. But actually, if I can stick with this and really put my foot on the gas, I can get a deposit for a house. I'm earning serious cash. I can pay my parents back. This is a really good idea. Mm. And I just, you know, you get this kind of adrenaline. You get this, I already felt at that point in my life and my age and what I was going through that I'd trashed my dreams. And I was like, well, let's trash them further at that point. That was my mindset at that time. Yeah.
And you did make a hell of a lot of money. And this kind of struck me that, you know, you really know how these things work. You also set up an Instagram account purposefully to annoy people about how much money you were making.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate social strategy. I don't know if any listeners are familiar with the influencer and creator Sophie Rain. She invented this strategy where basically it's called rage bait. And you create content with the intent for people to engage with it. And of course, we all know social media, people like to engage when they're angry. So yeah, I made a TikTok account, an Instagram account, kind of, it was difficult to do. I'll be honest, it was very, very difficult morally to do. But in a way, yeah, you kind of flaunt the lifestyle it gives you and the money it gives you, because when people engage with it, it gets more views, it gets more views, you get more subscribers. So it was all a strategy. It's all very carefully plans behind the scenes. I think people think these adult creators are, you know, dumb blondes, but they're not. They're extremely intelligent, and it's all a strategy they've been building behind the scenes for months, and it works.
Yeah. What? And for you, what brought it to an end?
What brought it to an end, I think, was when the work became me. As I said, was very willing to step into a persona that wasn't me, and that was hard. But I was doing it, as I said already, and I've said a million times, to survive, to put food on the table. But, you know, I earned a serious amount of cash. And I looked in the mirror one day and I was like, I don't recognize myself. I've loved doing this. I've got myself out of a difficult situation. Good for me. But what's underneath now, Luce? Where are we? You know, I took it so seriously and I did it really hard. And I did really enjoy it. And you're allowed to change your mind. It got to the point I was like, actually, I did this so I could fund my writing career and I could fund my journalism. But I've stopped that now because I've become too consumed with this. I've stopped doing the things I used to enjoy. And this was all supposed to be the purpose behind it. And again, some people do this for a living full time and they love it. And I love that for them. But it started to take a hit on my confidence. I think the hate I was getting on social media became very overwhelming. Mm. And I was like, actually, I think it's time to stop. And that's also okay. That's also okay.
Yeah. And tell us what a whale is, because people might be familiar with that term. You kind of had like a few key clients, so to speak.
A whale, yes, that's very niche industry term. So a whale is what we define as someone who is a big spender. And I don't mean 100, 200, 300 pounds. I mean 10, 20, 30,000 pounds. These people have more money than we can imagine. And whales typically make up, honestly, sometimes 50, 60, 70% of big creators' earnings. I had one or two of these whales, if you like. I remember one of them paid me £10,000 just to talk to them, which, you know, is to some people a grotesque amount of money. It's quite sickening, actually, sometimes. Even, you know, to me, I was like, my goodness, if I could splash that kind of cash to talk to someone online. I can't imagine the lifestyle they live. But yeah, they're the people that run that kind of underground network. If you know, you know.
Mm. And those people, did you feel, because you're kind of acting, really, so did you have an actual relationship with them, or did they feel they had a kind of a relationship with kind of fake Lucy?
I was really firm on this from day one for that reason. There, I think you attract a lot of vulnerable people to these websites. And yes, it's a service. Yes, it's a transaction. But everyone's a human, as am I, as are they. And I always used to say to my subscribers or my clients, I used to say, please take breaks. Please log off and connect with your family and friends. Please, you know, we have a service here. But when I log off, I log off. So in a way, yes, I think there was obviously some, I played a role, but they knew that. And I was crystal clear as a person. I really didn't believe in taking advantage of people, because most of my clients wanted support. They wanted someone to listen. So much of my work was just chatting to people and asking about their day. And it was almost catering, I think, to loneliness, which really opened my eyes to a bigger problem we have in society. And there's a big part of me, I was very grateful that I could actually keep people company at the end of the day. You never know what someone's going through.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, and you were around a year at it. You made a lot of money, paid off all your debts. As I understand it, you've invested some of your money. Now, what are you going to do now?
Well, I'm back to writing and journalism, which is what I always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. My money, I've invested it. I'm very, very sensible with my money. I try to invest 80% of it. I'm going to let it sit there. You know, I may have done what I did. People may have their opinions about that, but I'm very financially sensible. And I never want to, you know, be in that position again. If I am, I am, but I hope not to be.
Yeah.
So I've invested it for the future. And I'm back to writing and I'm back to journalism, because it really, you know, I went to a private school and I worked at a big national newspaper. I lived my life from a glass bubble, and I saw a very, very, very different side to life and to struggle and to what you will do to put food on the table. And it's really changed how I work and what I want to do with my life, and just to never judge someone, just to be kind. So, yeah, I'm back to writing, and I'm telling stories about myself and other people who may be a little bit misunderstood and need a bigger voice.
I suppose it will. It'll kind of follow you around a bit. And even if you win the Pulitzer Prize, it'll be Lucy Blanc, Pulitzer Prize winner who once had an OnlyFans account.
Yeah. And do you know what? I think at the end of the day, I'm a human being. And I think, you know, if human beings are on the planet just to be liked, how dull. How dull, you know. I want to pave the way, because there was no one like me out there. There was, you know, this kind of, oh my gosh, yeah, Pulitzer Prize and OnlyFans. That doesn't mix. Why can't it?
Mm.
Why can't it? Let's change that. I've got history. So what? We always say you can be anything until people don't like what you are. And I want to change that. I want to tell people that you can have some really controversial and taboo chapters, but you can still go on and do great things. And I think that message encourages people to have hope and continue to be a good person. So I hope it follows me around, because it will tell, you know, people who like my work that you can do whatever you want.
Lucy, thanks a million for speaking with us today. That was Lucy Blanc there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.